I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of October. All things political coming up this hour. Matt Bai, we're delighted to have him as our guest again. He's national political columnist for Yahoo News and previously was the chief political correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. His most recent book, we talked with him about the book when it came out in hardcover, All the Truth is Out, The Week Politics Went Tabloid, the story of Gary Hart's fall from grace is the subject matter of the book, and it was selected by NPR as the best book of the year. We'll talk a little bit about what Gary Hart is up to now. We'll rehash the Democratic debate just a wee bit. Matt has written that Clinton needed to appeal to disheartened activists, fueling Sanders' growing revolt in Iowa and New Hampshire. Did she have a strong enough appeal? Joe Biden, evidently word is out in the last hour or so that he will make his announcement as to whether or not he's running within 48 hours. Matt has written that after the debate, Bernie Sanders seemed like a fine labor secretary. Martin O'Malley seemed like a fine attorney general. The international nuclear agreement with Iran went into full force yesterday. We'll talk about the small amounts of money collected by Ben Carson, Bernie Sanders, and Ted Cruz. An interesting piece that Matt wrote on gun violence. I don't know if you're familiar with Representative Tim Murphy's piece of legislation. He's a Republican from Pennsylvania and is author of a bill addressing mental health issues that he believes are central to mass shooting crises. He is a clinical psychologist. And there will be more. Oh, the Benghazi hearing. Hillary Clinton will be testifying, and I'm sure she is preparing for that right now and has been for some time. She will appear before the 12-member select committee on Benghazi on Thursday of this week. To reach our conversation, the phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Matt. Thanks for joining us again.
Kathleen, nice to talk to you again. How's things in Wisconsin?
Well, it's sunny. You know, it's getting warmer. It's all right.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like it's kind of close to what it is here.
Well, good. So we're speaking from the same kind of sunny skies. Well, before we talk about politics, do you really think it's going to be the Cubs versus the Jays and the whole country will root for the Cubs to no avail? Really?
In fairness, I thought so a few days ago, but this is why I don't make predictions in politics, because it doesn't look so good now. I'll tell you this. I'm a Yankee fan, and I watched the Blue Jays very carefully this year, less so the National League. And I know they're down 2 games to none again, and I would love to see them lose, but they're a really great team. So as much as I have a lot of friends who are Royals fans and it might be their turn, I wouldn't feel too good about being up 2 games to none against that team.
No, what about the Mets?
Well, the Mets look good. I watched them last night.
Yeah,
I may have
too.
Underestimated the Mets. Because I thought I had watched the Cubs in the wild card. I don't follow the National League all that closely, but I thought the Cubs looked like an awfully good team, but they had their ace last night and got beat. So now I probably would take back that prediction.
Yeah, well, they're going to Chicago, though. I'm Chicago born and bred, so and a White Sox fan. But, you know, have to root for the Cubs now.
Well, the good news is now I'm trained from watching politics to understand that there's absolutely no penalty to being wrong in your predictions.
Yes.
You say things and be completely wrong and just pretend you never said them. So I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's start with Joe Biden. Evidently, the word in the last couple hours is that he is going to make an announcement in 48 hours. What do you think, and what would it do to the race should he enter, Matt?
It's a good question. I mean, first of all, you know, I'm hearing that from you, and I don't put a lot of stock in it. I would kind of caution against that because, you know, we've heard this a lot now. It's coming soon. It's coming after
right.
the weekend. I don't know what the source is. I mean, I've checked in with people close to him time to time, and my sense was, you know, that it was not clear exactly when it's coming. If it comes within 48 hours, that'll be interesting. You know, look, I think I tend to think he won't run at this point. Particularly if he does announce sooner rather than later, because at this moment there seems to be less clamor around it than there might have been a week ago, and you have to think that would affect his decision. But look, I think it would be a positive development if he did. I think he'd be a formidable candidate. I think she could use a formidable establishment candidate, meaning Hillary Clinton, in the race, even if she is the nominee. I don't think it's too late to make a case, and I think he's earned the right to do that, and I think he's a stronger candidate than a lot of people in Washington think he is. So I think it would be just a healthy thing for the process, good for the party, and good for the voters. But, you know, he certainly has earned the right to make that decision himself. And if he decides not to, then, you know, that's probably all for the better, because you got to really want it and be pretty committed to it to get into the race and have an impact.
Mm-hmm. She, I guess, even before the Democratic debate, was also preparing for this appearance before the 12-member Select Committee on Benghazi. Her appearance is on Thursday of this week. Could this be a potential problem for her, Matt, or has this been rehashed so much that it really is some Republicans just out to get her politically?
You know, I tend to think of that, and if you could visualize it as sort of a foreground and background issue. In the foreground, that is, in the way we think about it in the immediacy of the campaign, I think it's more, as you suggest, not very consequential, unless something shocking happens or unless there's a terrible moment for her. Because, as you say, it just motivates both bases. Democrats will rally around her and see it as a partisan divide. Republicans will simply, conservatives, Republicans certainly will simply believe she's lying and that it has consequences no matter what. And so it's really about ginning up energy and even money in both camps. But the background issue here, I think, is the noise around Hillary Clinton's scandal, trustworthiness, partisanship. It's all the stuff sort of left over from the 90s that I think follows her like a vague cloud. And people call me a little cynical for this. I was on with Barney Frank on Yahoo, and he thought I was being a little uncharitable, but I did think when Bernie Sanders said to her in the debate, you know, turned and said, well, this may not be good politics, but I don't want to hear about your damn emails anymore, which was a great moment for him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he believes that. I think he was being sincere. I'll give him that. But I don't think it's bad politics, and I think he knows it's not bad politics to say that, because what he's also saying, really, and I think a lot of voters respond to this, is I don't want to hear about your scandals anymore. And if we get you, mm-hmm. we get all of it, right? It's always the emails. It's always the lying. It's always the Clintons. It's always the money. And we need to get past it. That idea actually worked pretty well for Barack Obama in 2008. And I think it continues to be an Achilles heel for her, whether it's well-founded or not, whether it's Benghazi or something else. There is a sense that when you get Hillary Clinton, you also get all of the tension, all of the partisanship, all of the media dynamic that comes with that, and it's exhausting, and it feels like it belongs somewhere in our past.
Mm-hmm. You said that in the debate, this was prior to the debate, Matt, that Clinton needed to appeal to disheartened activists that have been flocking to Bernie Sanders in Iowa and New Hampshire. Did she appeal to disheartened activists?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen real good polling on it, and, you know, you get into trouble when you guess. I thought she had about as good a debate as she was going to have. She seemed pretty comfortable. I think she certainly reassured establishment Democrats. I think she probably, she has a lot of sympathy on the left, the more left flank of the party. It's just that people have felt she's become too expedient and too cautious, and was perhaps not as progressive as other alternatives. And I think she probably did a good job of reassuring a lot of those people in the debate too. So I thought, I don't think it settles the issue. I don't think it blocks off a path for a Joe Biden, and I don't think it takes all the steam out of what Bernie Sanders has put together. But she needed to, calm some jittery nerves both in the ideological wing of her party and in the establishment, among the establishment in Washington. And I think she did that by having a solid debate in which she clearly seemed more presidential and readier than anybody else mm-hmm. on the stage, in my view.
Bernie Sanders, evidently, one thing that really is something about this race is one of the major candidates, maybe he won't be president, but he's sure creating quite a stir. Bernie Sanders has said that he's going to give a major speech on democratic socialism.
I can't wait for that.
Definitely. I know.
I mean, this is it's a great debate, and right. He is doing something positive. I mean, look, I people get mad at me. I get a lot of hate mail. I think Bernie Sanders brings something important to the process. I think he's going to influence his party. I think you could argue that in some ways he's going to influence. He may end up influencing the ideological drift of his party. more than Howard Dean did in 2004. Mm. I think, you know, he's sort of taken the mantle of Elizabeth Warren here, and if he does performs well in those first couple of primaries, he's really going to push Hillary Clinton and the whole party really toward the left. But look, realistically, and I can be proven wrong, and everyone can make fun of me as much as they want. You know, they can drum me out of the business, but I think we've elected an African American president. I think it's entirely possible, likely within reality, to have a woman president this time or in a cycle very soon. I don't think that's a heavy lift at this point, but I think we're going to elect capitalists. I don't think we are near a place in America where people will elect a president who's not a capitalist. I think that's a baseline for American presidents, and I think that's a real problem for Bernie Sanders to be taken seriously as a presidential candidate. Can he influence his party? Absolutely. But I think American presidents tend to be capitalists. Americans tend to be capitalists, and if he wants to make that case, he should. But I think it goes over better in Europe than here.
Ben Carson, you wrote about him extensively in September. At that point, he had surged to the top of the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire, establishing, you write, himself as a serious threat for the Republican nomination. You say Carson is a flat-out genius, even if he doesn't believe in evolution. If you had to guess back in September, Matt, you'd say that he'd probably win the caucuses. Would you say that now in October?
I don't know, Kathleen. I think he's got a shot. First of all, let's start with what the caucuses are about. I think Iowa's a little bit irrelevant, honestly, in this process. Because they went for Huckabee, they went for Santorum. Iowa is not the mainstream of the Republican Party, and certainly the Republican caucus in Iowa is not the mainstream of America. So a lot can happen, and I don't think it's all that consequential. And could Trump win it? Sure. Could Ben Carson win it? Yes. I absolutely think he could, and I could see that happening. Having said that, since I wrote that column, I don't know what it's been, a month or something,
right.
I don't think he's acquitted himself well. I think, you know, it's fine to be the outsider who doesn't know very much about politics, but, you know, knows how to do something extremely complicated extremely well and then, you know, to sort of make progress in your political messaging. It's another thing to come in as the outsider who doesn't know anything and then continue not to know anything and then say a bunch of stuff that strike people as crazy. Because even if that has an appeal among the conservative electorate in Iowa, they care about electability too. And Ben Carson may be just one step too far when he's out there, talking about the Holocaust and
right.
if more Jews had guns. I mean, I get how that goes over with the pro-gun crowd. I've been around politics a long time. I understand the point he's making, and I know a lot of people share the view. But at a certain point, when you appear to know so little about politics and then you say this stuff that's really explosive, people begin to wonder, are you serious? And are they wasting their caucus or their vote? And so, I think Carson has a strong narrative appeal for a lot of voters. I admire him as a doctor and as a person, but he may be making himself less of a political factor every time he opens his mouth at this point.
It is strange he doesn't believe in evolution, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got a lot of mail about that, actually, when I made that point. So I should reflect that point of view. I mean, I got a lot of mail from people who from conservatives who said you don't have to be dumb to reject evolution. There are plenty of intellectuals whose spirituality and intellect conflict and who have deep misgivings about the theory of evolution. And that's fair. I'm not going to, I was taking a little bit of a swipe at him, but I'm not going to reject that point of view. Look, I'm not a scientist, so I can't sit here and make the scientific argument for evolution. I think it is the widely accepted explanation, and it has widespread scientific support, and so it is odd to see a scientist of his stature rejecting that theory. But to me, it doesn't make him crazy. I mean, there are plenty of people who have significant doubts based on their spirituality, and that's fine.
Yeah. But the other thing about Iowa, I mean, we were in Iowa for the caucuses back in 2008, and nobody, all the people I was talking to there, had no idea that Obama was going to win those, and it really put him front and center. If Bernie Sanders wins the Iowa caucuses, doesn't that put him front and center in a way that is meaningful? No?
Sure, it's meaningful. I don't think it gets him the nomination. There's a couple of things going on there. I mean, one thing that jumps when you say that, Kathleen, because I was there too, it's important to remember what you're saying, which is, 2 weeks out of that caucus, it began to take shape, right? So we don't know what we like to talk about these things endlessly because it's fun, but we have no idea what it's going to look like until a few weeks out. Because you could only really see Obama surging in Iowa in that last, I would say, 10 days in 2008. It's a little different. I mean, first of all, for a couple reasons. First of all, because Barack Obama was an establishment, or at least enough of an establishment figure. You know, he had a lot of he had a huge amount of popularity in all parts of the party. And the question was he, you know, could he win as an African American? And so you know, his winning Iowa was a very big proof point for him, for his candidacy. And then the second thing that happened right after Iowa, don't forget, first of all, he lost New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But the thing that really happened for him that was so consequential that really could not have happened for any other candidate at that point was that the African American vote, which is so critical in the Democratic primaries, really shifted en masse to Obama at that point because it suddenly became clear that he could win.
Right.
And that really undercut Hillary Clinton in a way that Bernie Sanders would not, because there's really no other candidate who could do that. That was a very special moment and a special identity for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be significant. Look, I think if Bernie Sanders wins Iowa, it's going to create a huge, certainly a media narrative, and I think a huge showdown in New Hampshire and elsewhere. But I think he could win, actually, Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't think he will, but he could win Iowa and New Hampshire and still have an uphill climb because it's so hard for him to win in other parts of the country, again, because he's because of that S word, because of socialism, because he's not a natural, doesn't seem like a natural presidential figure. He has a very unusual countenance.
Yes.
He's older. He's you know, on a policy level, he may be less in the mainstream of the electorate. Although I don't know where the Democratic Party is at this point. So you know, and for all those reasons, he's not as great a retail politician. For all those reasons, I tend to think that the reality of Bernie Sanders at some point becomes a little bit less than the ideal of him, because he is sort of the progressive force in the race. And the Democratic Party has a long history of this kind of candidate surging and challenging the establishment and then coming up short. And so for the reasons I began with, I think President Obama broke that mold for very specific reasons. But I think Bernie Sanders much more falls into that traditional mm-hmm. role and has a much harder time breaking out of it.
Well, it's almost as much fun to watch Bernie Sanders as it is to watch Larry David, don't you think?
I do find Bernie Sanders entertaining. I mean, I wondered, as I was watching him, what Americans and Democrats in particular did think, because he is an idea for a lot of people. Most of the people who've been saying they'd vote for Bernie Sanders wouldn't know him if they ran into him at the CVS.
Right, right.
And so, you know, here you got this guy, and he is a lot older than they may have thought, and he's angry, and he rarely smiles,
I know.
And he's got a thick Brooklyn accent, and what do you make of this guy, you know? And I'm curious about it. I don't know what people make of it. I mean, maybe because the Democratic Party's in a weird moment, and it may be there's so much frustration and so much surging progressivism in the party, or at least liberalism in the party, because I think they're different things, that actually plays well. Maybe the authenticity of that plays really well. That wouldn't shock me. But I have to believe that some number of voters saw him for the first time and thought, man, he's kind of it's cool and fun, but it's not presidential.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the question: is can you see him as president? And I don't know.
Well, let's ask our audience: is there anybody out there? You're a pretty sophisticated politically aware audience, but maybe there's somebody out there who hadn't seen Bernie Sanders before, and you saw him on the debate, and what did you think? I'm sure that we'll hear from some Bernie supporters, Matt, during this hour. We welcome your phone calls. We have so much more to talk about. Matt wrote a really interesting book about Gary Hart, and we subsequently had Gary Hart on the air for a program, too. It was a really interesting interview. Matt's the author of All the Truth Is Out, The Week Politics Went Tabloid, which is about Colorado Senator Gary Hart, who many considered to be one of the smartest people ever, who ran for president, and then it all fell apart because of this focus on Donna Rice. You'll remember the story. The book is out in paperback now, and Hart is still involved politically. We'll talk about where he is right now, and welcome your phone calls. We have yet to talk about Representative Tim Murphy's legislation addressing mental health issues that he believes are very important to try to solve some of this mass shooting crises. Many of them will talk about that. And Paul Ryan, we'll talk about Paul Ryan. Will he be the next Speaker of the House? I want to tie in the second hour of the show a little bit to the first, because we're talking about the Frontline documentary on immigration, really interesting behind-the-scenes look at trying to get immigration reform. And one of the Tea Party members, Mulvaney from South Carolina, talks in the film about how Republicans really need to attract more minority voters, which, of course, Republicans were saying after the last election. He mentions 3 million more Hispanics now in Texas, and the Republicans not offering much to minority voters. He says if Latinos sway the vote in Texas for the presidency, we won't see another Republican president. So we'll talk about that some with Matt. And whatever you'd like to discuss, that I give you the number. Here it is, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Matt Bai is our guest, national political columnist for Yahoo News. He was the chief political correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. So, to you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Matt Bai is with us for all things political. We have tons of phone calls coming in, and we start with Spike in Milwaukee. Hi, Spike.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
It's interesting. You talked earlier about the polls and how the polls are all showing Hillary way out there, Bernie trailing. But those are the mainstream polls. A lot of the online polls are showing Bernie a lot closer and in some places ahead. You know, the mainstream media on Wednesday said in unison that Hillary had won the election. Well, they said that too. But that Hillary had won the debate.
Right.
But I saw one poll. I saw a number of polls. One that stands out was an organization, I think it was called SF, that had 82% for Bernie winning the debate and 12% for Hillary, with the other three guys way behind. I think that what your guest has been saying is true, to the point that right now Bernie is not getting the mainstream media coverage that Hillary is. A lot of people don't know who Bernie is because the mainstream media won't talk about it. I mean, let's face it, the things he's talking about are things that are going to hurt the mainstream media in the long run if they come to pass. So he's the last guy that they want to see in the White House. But I think that if Bernie, it's going to be interesting to hear this major speech he's going to have on democratic socialism and see, A, what he says, and B, how it's received. But this is just me as a 65-year-old observer, a long-time observer of politics. If Bernie can keep at least generating the enthusiasm among the progressive and especially among the young people that he's generating right now. Come Iowa, he'll probably take that. New Hampshire, probably take that. And then the mainstream media is going to have to take a real serious look at it.
Matt, what do you say?
Oh, well, Spike, the last time we had a mainstream media meeting of the families, we all agreed he could have exactly 18 inches of copy a day. So we'll meet again, and we'll see if we want to revise that quota. But look, I'm just having fun. But look, this is the moment we're living in, right? Everybody sees their truth, and any truth that conflicts with it is because the media is not doing so. I disagree emphatically that the mainstream media has not given Bernie Sanders coverage. I think Bernie Sanders has had all kinds of coverage. I think Bernie Sanders is a national celebrity. We talked about, you mentioned Gary Hart, Kathleen, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I mean, Gary Hart, when he ran in 1984, nobody knew who he was. He was at 2 or 3% in the polls when he won New Hampshire. I mean, Bernie Sanders is a rock star right now in the country. So the media is not ignoring Bernie Sanders by any stretch. He's filling a huge void, and I may even be overplayed, although, you know, I think his poll numbers justify it. Look, there's two things in conflict here. Historically, as I say, there's a Democratic Party dynamic, and that party dynamic has always been the insurgent leftist candidate who some segment of the base rallies around and invests in. And at the end of the day, most of the Democratic Party tends to be a little more moderate and cares a little bit more about electability, and usually the activist class kind of has its heart broken, except in 2008. But, you know, I hasten to add, I don't know what can happen in this moment. We're in a totally different political moment. The technology is different. The culture is different. People are really fed up. Mm-hmm. No one thought an African-American president could be elected in 2008. He was. We're seeing all kinds of crazy stuff that we didn't think possible. So, you know, could this be the year that a Bernie Sanders could win the Democratic nomination, that a Donald Trump could win the Republican nomination? Sure. I mean, I think it's possible. I don't think either of those things are likely to happen, and I certainly would not invest much in online polls, because that, as bad as I understand the skepticism, as bad as regular polling is that's done in the media, and I think it's pretty bad and pretty meaningless, the online polling as a self-selecting exercise is less than meaningless, and I certainly would not look to that for your inspiration.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the minority vote. We're talking with these frontline people, the second hour of the program, Matt, and it's a really interesting documentary. I don't know how they got access, incredible access, mm-hmm. behind the scenes in Congress. And one of the Tea Party members of Congress talked about how the Republicans, and we were talking about that after the Republicans lost the presidency the second go-around almost 4 years ago, that they simply have to appeal more to African-American and Latino voters. This Tea Party member of Congress said, you know, there are 3 million more Hispanic voters now since 2012 in Texas, and we haven't done anything to reach out to all of those voters. If we lose Texas, forget it. We're not going to have a Republican president again. Tell me what the strategy is, if indeed he's got a valid point here, and also talk about Bernie and how he's going to need to reach out to. He doesn't seem to resonate very much with minority voters as well. Why aren't the Republicans dealing with this issue more?
Yeah, that documentary sounds really interesting. I also thought your show tomorrow sounds really interesting. I wonder if there's a sophisticated alien civilization that we found. Maybe there's a new pool of presidential candidates.
I know, but they're probably really smart.
We could use a little sophistication, a little common sense. You know, I do. Obviously, the Republican Party has a problem, and anybody in the Republican Party who doesn't think they have a demographic problem is not paying attention. You can't be a presidential party. Apparently, you can be pretty successful as a congressional party, but you can't be an executive party successfully when you're older, only getting older white people and older white men in particular to vote for you as the society changes. And you know, the Democrats went through their own problems here for a long time, where they were a congressional powerhouse but had a very hard time winning the presidency. So these things do happen in cycles. You know, having said that, I'm not one who believes that demography is destiny, for the simple reason that I think we live in a time where loyalties are pretty easy to shift. In other words, someone can be a Democrat. They can be a Democrat for 20 years. They can vote Democrat every election. But they're not owned by the Democratic Party in the way their parents or grandparents might have been owned, because we don't live institutionally like that. That's not the Internet age. And if a Republican comes along who speaks differently and challenges the orthodoxy of the party and has a strong message, I think you can get a lot of those voters. So I don't think we're living in an age like FDR, where you became a Democrat in 1932 and you died one in 1980. I think Republicans can fix this on the executive level pretty easily if they can create a process and a conversation, and if someone has the courage to come along and make the argument that yields a broader, more inclusive nominee. And I think you could see that this year. I mean, I don't know if that happens immediately, but look, if Marco Rubio is the nominee of the Republican Party, mm-hmm. he's going to cut into the Latino margin.
Yes,
I don't know
yes.
how much.
But he will.
But he's going to change the math of the election,
right.
And probably among younger voters too, if he does it right,
mm-hmm.
And maybe even among women. So, you know, it's hard work, but and again, the process. If you create a process that is exclusionary in nature, you will get exclusionary nominees. But I don't think that just because the Republican Party has a demographic problem today, it's going to have a demographic problem in every election going forward. I think to rely on that, as some Democrats do, is to sort of ignore the ethos of our time, not just as it relates to politics, but as it relates to everything.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Spike, for your call. Let's go to Hattie in northern Minnesota. Hi, Hattie.
Hi.
Hi.
Brian. I wanted to just speak to the electability of Bernie Sanders. I'm a mainstream sort of Democratic voter. I'm donating to Bernie's campaign, and I knew who he was before he ran. I'm not worried about his socialism. That's a word that's been thrown around. I live in an area where if you say that, they think communism. So, but if you walk around where I live, or particularly if you drive a ways out in the country, you'll find all kinds of Bernie Sanders signs up. And I think in my area, that's unusual. So I, in my heart, I'm voting for Bernie, but I do kind of agree with your guest that it's probably going to end up being Hillary. But I'm hoping that, you know, Bernie actually will be our nominee. I'd prefer Elizabeth Warren, but Bernie would be a good choice for me because he represents what I think, and he's not afraid to say it. He comes across as authentic, and there's where I have a bit of a problem with Hillary. Although I like Hillary, a lot of times I get the feeling that Hillary is telling us what we want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie's not afraid to tell people he's a socialist, and he's out there with it. And I think when anybody is who they are, it's an advantage.
Hmm.
And I guess that's my comment.
Thanks, Hattie. So how about that? Signed in northern Minnesota for Bernie, Matt.
I'm sure. And you know, I think Hattie makes a great point about authenticity and about the fact that he says what he believes. And I do think, you know, there's something happening out there. I don't know that Sanders is the ideal candidate, but he's a vehicle. And because he's the one who has the courage to get in and make that case, he's going to get a lot of credit for that. And he has, you know, he may go further than any of us thought. I do think in some ways Hattie has just nicely articulated the case for Joe Biden, should he want to run, right? Which is carrying the mantle of the Obama administration, you know, arguing that there's still work to be done for, you know, in the cause of activist government, being somebody who everyone agrees is authentic to a fault, right? Nobody thinks Joe Biden is pretending to be someone else. If anything, the problem is that he'll say all kinds of stuff that make you scratch your head because he is who he is. And contrasting that with Hillary Clinton, but being clearly more electable probably than Bernie Sanders, right? Clearly more of an establishment figure as the Vice President of the United States. I think, you know, he fills a lane potentially that no one else has been able to fill. I mean, I would have thought Martin O'Malley, as the former head of the Democratic governors, former mayor,
mm-hmm.
would have been,
so too.
You know, running to the left of Hillary would have been a stronger alternative, but to this point at least he's not been and didn't had a debate that really changes that dynamic. The only thing I would say Hattie raised, it's an interesting point about socialism. I mean, is it a dirty word? Is it a bad thing? You know, I think a lot of what Bernie Sanders talks about in terms of infusing sort of the social justice with an economic justice is a powerful message across the political spectrum, not just for the left. I think the thing that Democrats forget, that liberal activists forget, and politicians forget in the Democratic Party, is that there's a lot of skepticism about the ability of government to deliver on the things that it promises and the ability of government bureaucracies to function effectively. And so when you go talk about higher taxes and more government programs and more direct government intervention in education or in economic progress, you might have an audience for that, except the Democrats never address the idea of what makes anyone think government can actually take those tax dollars and use them well. And I think my own feeling about socialism and redistribution of wealth and higher taxation is that all of that is maybe saleable to some large part of the electorate if it's coupled with the idea of reform, the kind of reform Bill Clinton talked about. But if you're not going to acknowledge the need for reform, if you're not going to acknowledge the flaws that people see in government and the suspicions they have about it, then I think it's very hard to make a successful case for more government and more taxation and a larger role for the central federal government. I think you have to be, I think the only successful people who've advanced the cause of government have done so while also coupling that with a message of reform.
Matt Bai, our guest for All Things Political. He's now the national political columnist for Yahoo News. He was the chief political correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. His most recent book, All the Truth Is Out, The Week Politics Went Tabloid, which is the story of Gary Hart. And we will talk a little bit about Gary Hart. And I want to get to this Representative Tim Murphy because of this issue of guns and these horrendous events that keep taking place in this country and what's happened in Wisconsin in terms of the Badger Gun Shop, and also some representatives in the state saying that people should be able to carry their weapons, concealed weapons, in the classrooms on college campuses. Matt writes about Representative Tim Murphy, a Republican, seven-term Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, who has a bill that's coming up for a vote. And we'll talk about that bill, and we'll talk about Gary Hart, and we'll talk about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And we have gone 43 minutes without mentioning Donald Trump. We have to mention Donald Trump and Ben Carson and Benghazi, the hearings, and whatever else you'd like to address. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Matt Bai is with us for All Things Political. Our number, and we have some lines open for him, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Matt, and we interviewed him when this book was in hardcover, is also the author of All the Truth Is Out about Gary Hart. The book is now out in paperback. And I was delighted to have a chance to interview Senator Hart after you wrote your book. You talk about him as sincere, patriotic, and thoughtful a man as you have ever encountered in American politics. That's really saying something. You've met a lot of people in American politics, man.
I've met a lot of people in American politics.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's why I wrote a whole book based on, you know, my thoughts about that episode. I think Hart's a deeply impressive guy who probably would have been a very good president. You never know for sure,
mm-hmm.
and probably would have been elected president. But I think his moment and the moment in which he was undone by a sex scandal in 1987 marked a real change for political journalism that leads us toward a lot of the distrust we heard from Spike earlier and you hear from others, and led us to a different kind of politics. And I think the exhibit for that, the best exhibit for that, is Donald Trump, since we want to mention Donald Trump, right, because you have to. But Trump, Trump is the fusion. He is the embodiment of the fusion between serious governing and entertainment. And
mm-hmm.
that fusion, that collision began, I think, in 1987 for a whole bunch of reasons that were already present in the society, a whole bunch of forces that collided in that moment. That the academic Neil Postman in his book Amusing Ourselves to Death had really predicted 2 years earlier. And so, my feeling is to understand what's going on with Trump, to understand Ben Carson, to understand this political moment, you really have to, I think, understand what went on in the late 1980s and where political journalism took a turn and where our politics took a turn. And that's what I tried to explore with the story of Gary Hart and All the Truth Is Out. I'm very proud of that book.
Yeah, as well you should be. It's a great book.
Thanks.
And Hart is in Northern Ireland now, you write.
Yes, you know, he was there last year as a special representative for Secretary of State Kerry, and he's back now, and he's been trying to put the power-sharing arrangement back on track, or at least have some positive influence on behalf of the United States, because unbeknownst to most of us, it's not a major issue here, but it is greatly imperiled, and there's a lot of tension still between Protestants and Catholics in Ireland. So, and that agreement, all that hard work, is in danger of falling apart. So, look, I mean, he's almost 80 years old now, and he's he is still working on behalf of the country, and still traveling back and forth across continents, and still impressing people with his knowledge of the issues. And you have to think to yourself, not just am I glad he's having that opportunity, but then you have to think to yourself, what did we miss by not having the service of a Gary Hart for such a long period of time, and how many other people's service have we missed because they don't want to get into politics, or because they were driven out of politics, or because they're disgusted by it, and what have we, and I mean us in the media and also as a country, what have we created? What kind of process, what kind of climate have we created? I think those are questions we have got to address. It's not enough to laugh them off anymore. It's a serious business.
Yeah. Mary in Marshfield, our next caller for you, Matt. Hi, Mary.
Hi. About Mr. Trump, when I heard that he said climate change isn't important, I ruled him out because it is a second concern in national security. So I thought he's not paying attention. I'm not voting for him.
Who's capturing your fancy, Mary?
Actually, Hillary.
Really?
And I think she should have been the president, and Barack Obama should be out there campaigning this time.
And you like her because?
She is the only one that has the information and has worked hard. Bernie Sanders is very nice. I like him very much. Elizabeth Warren, wonderful too. But she's got the experience. She's not perfect, but none of them are. So I will go with her if I have a chance.
All right. Thanks, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say, Matt?
Well, I mean, if Mary was with Hillary Clinton in 2008, Donald Trump is probably not counting on her vote.
Right.
But look, I don't, you know, climate change is an issue. I agree with Mary. I think it's an important issue. I don't think Trump has a serious plan for governing the country. I don't think he has a serious ambition to govern the country. I think, I think he got into this largely as an exercise in reality TV in a different forum, in entertainment. And I think it took off on him, and he's enjoying the attention and the ride. I mean, look, if you're Donald Trump, and I think, you know, your case could be made that he really is a megalomaniac, and I've spent a little time with him many years ago, so I base that on something. If this process can make you the most talked about, most followed person in America for some period of time, that's worth doing. But for all I know, he could be the nominee, because as I say, this is a very different political moment. But I don't, I do not think he is has a serious governing platform or ambition. And I think that's the minimum of what we ought to demand of our presidential candidates. And so I've probably been unusually blunt in my dismissiveness toward his candidacy. But look, however much emotion you capture, this is serious. I take politics seriously. It's not a forum for entertainment. We've got to draw the line somewhere. We as a media, we as a country. And I think it's fine to get people riled up, and it's fine to be appealing. But governance is a serious business requiring a serious plan and some expertise. And to the extent that we, you know, make it all about a sort of reality TV,
right,
show, I think we do ourselves a tremendous disservice, and it's our job to point that out when it happens.
Yeah. Wally in Phillips. Hi, Wally.
Hi, this is Wally.
Hi, Wally.
My comment is that up until the Democratic debate, I contributed equally to both Bernie and Hillary, and I was so impressed with Bernie, I have contributed to his campaign, and I feel a burn.
And why do you feel a burn, Wally?
Well, I'm totally impressed with how he wants to handle Wall Street. Mm. And, that's, I think, a very strong issue that we need to attack. I feel strongly on that.
Mm-hmm. Do a lot of people feel strongly on that, Matt?
I think they do. I mean, I think in a broader sense, whether it's Wall Street or whether we're talking about taxing the wealthy, but I think there's a broader sense that there's a class of Americans who are dismissing, you know, are adding to the problem and dismissing it and not doing enough and taking too much of the wealth and
yes,
not giving enough back. And, you know, the I think this kind of gets to the problem with Hillary Clinton's campaign, which is I don't think Bernie Sanders would have as much currency right now if she actually stood up and made an argument for what she believed, whatever it is. And I don't mean she should move left. I mean, her solution to this has use a little more leftist rhetoric and sound a little more like Bernie Sanders and wait till people realize that she's the more electable alternative, which is ironic because she's a woman running for president, which, you know, 20 years ago, electable is not the word you would have used. But you know, what she hasn't done is really stand up in an authentic way and say to people, this is what I believe. It may not be popular, but here's why. Look, I represented Wall Street. I agree with you. There's more that needs to be done, but there's a reason I don't go as far as Bernie Sanders, and here's what that reason is, and here's what you're misunderstanding about the moment. And, you know, I think that would count for a lot with her. You know, I just don't think, look, the way I've written it is this, and I'm very serious about this. Hillary Clinton came into this campaign the far and away establishment favorite, virtually unchallenged. She had one challenger who, as we say, calls himself a socialist and was unknown to most Americans and is older than her, right, I think. You know, if there was ever a moment for a presidential candidate to level with voters about what she actually wanted to do for the country and why, even if it wasn't popular with her base, that was the moment. If that's not the moment, if this isn't the time to tell people who you really are, when is it coming? What would be a more opportune moment for a presidential candidate or a president to make a principled argument? So I think what you hear from voters a lot of the time is not just an ideological argument. It's an argument, okay, if Hillary Clinton disagrees with me, I might be able to handle that. She's got a different way of going about this. Let's hear it. But let's hear something. And the slogan of Hillary Clinton's campaign seems to be, let's just get there. Mm-hmm. Let's just say what we have to say. Let's just get there, and then you'll find out what I really want to do. And governing doesn't work like that, and voters are smart enough to know it doesn't work like that.
Well, what about on guns? Hasn't she been strong on guns, Matt?
Well, it's easy to be strong on guns, right? I mean, I would argue no, actually, but that's a different – this is a much more complex conversation. I mean, look, it's easy on an issue like guns because nobody in the base disagrees with you. And so that's why you see all the Democratic candidates coming out very strongly. But, you know, I was a little disappointed, honestly, that after that shooting in Oregon, another horrific shooting, another mentally unstable individual with way too much access to guns, who should have been noticed and stopped and wasn't, you know, you had Hillary Clinton and the White House and other Democrats stand up and dust off a bunch of old proposals that really have nothing to do with that crime. It's gun show loophole. It's they go after gun ownership and gun trafficking, right? It's gun show loophole. It's registration. It's a series of measures. It's ammunition, which would be a very smart thing to limit. It's assault weapons or so-called assault weapons. It's all the things that would get at gun trafficking or make it harder to own guns, but doesn't actually get at the nature of this kind of crime we saw in Oregon or in Charleston or in Arizona or in Newtown, Connecticut, near where I grew up. Those shootings have nothing to do with gun ownership or gun trafficking in America. They really have to do with mentally unstable people who have much too much access to guns and no one can seem to stop them, even where the signs are obvious. And that's where you talked about this bill.
Yes, Tim Murphy.
That Congressman Murphy has. He's a psychologist of 40 years, and his bill is not a gun bill. It's a mental illness bill, but it would make it easier. It would loosen some of the privacy rules to make it easier for a doctor to call the caregiver, the parent of someone who's not a minor or whoever's giving care, and say, hey, here's the medications this person needs to take. Here's their follow-up. What's going on in the home, right? And that person, he might hear that there are guns in the home, and he might be able to then express some concern. It would enable some changes to, say, the Medicaid system so that when you come in to see a doctor and the doctor says, you really need to see a psychologist today, you don't have to go home and come back for that appointment later because Medicaid won't reimburse two appointments in one day. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. These are fixable things, mm-hmm. and they might not prevent all of these shootings. But to me, that begins to address at least one problem, one tangible problem we are seeing over and over again that, you know, gun shows, frankly, just have nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm. But it hasn't come up for a vote.
It has not come up for a vote. Murphy's a Republican, and in his own party, isn't it, bringing it up for a vote. He's got a ton of co-sponsors. Everybody wants to be associated with the bill, but it's going to get privacy advocates very upset. It's going to offend some lobbies who expect to get federal funding for their programs because it would rejigger a lot of the funding for mental health in the country. It would also create a new assistant secretary, a new undersecretary for mental health at the at Health and Human Services. So it would shift around the way government does business. It would reform some of those practices. And that anytime you try to reform the way government does business, you arouse opposition, and the question is, you know, does your party think that opposition is, this is an issue where it's worth taking on the opposition, and to this point, for whatever reason, they have not.
Yeah. Matt, a real pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very, very much.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Kathleen. It's always fun to talk to you.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Bai, he's a national political columnist for Yahoo News. And before this job, he was the chief political correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. His book, and it is very good. We talked to him some time ago when it came out in hardcover, because Gary Hart's story is certainly worth listening to. The book, which is now in paperback, is All the Truth Is Out by Matt Bai, and it's the story of Gary Hart's fall from grace. Thank you, KP Whaley, for producing this interesting show. Thank you, KP Whaley, for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and we'll return and talk about the immigration battle with frontline people following the news.